The Philadelphia Daily News won its first ever Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting in 2010. The Tainted Justice series exposed extensive wrongdoings committed by narcotics officers in the city police department. Out this month, reporters Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker's book entitled Busted, A Tale of Corruption and Betrayal in the City of Brotherly Love, assimilated and told while the parent newspaper's resources and reach were on the wane. Joining me now, Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker, thanks for being here on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks for having us.
This is an exhilarating book, exhausting in many ways, and it's told in part as a first-person account. How did you decide on that strategy?
Well, it was really just one of practicality. We had first tried to tell the story switching back between our voices. So one chapter would be written in my voice and I would be the eye. And then Barbara would, in the second chapter, would be the eye. But the problem was that the narrative arc of the story wasn't matching up with when it was our turn to be the eye in the book. So then we thought, okay, well, let's try third person. But it felt a little too removed for us. So eventually we just decided to tell the story in my voice because the drug informant came to me first. And so the story sort of begins with him coming to the Daily News and asking for me.
But the first-person account becomes very personal. One clips coupons, one doesn't check the oil or the bank ledger, one's on Match.com. Why did you decide to take it to that level in the arc of telling the story?
Well, we decided to do it that way because there are several characters in the book that we illustrated very clearly, like our editor, Gar Joseph, our editor, Michael Days, all the drug dealers, Benny, who's the drug informant, the cops. And so because we tried to describe their personalities and characteristics, we thought it was only fair that we shared our own failures, foibles, the whole bag.
There are heroes and villains in this book, but overall, everybody seems to be human, complex, flawed.
Yes. Yes. That's extremely right. And in the course of writing the book, I mean, you know, you would think that Jeff Chudik, the officer in which the investigation began with, was like this completely, you know, we would make him out to be completely evil. And actually, we found sympathetic parts of him and parts of him we really liked. And so the characters in the book are they're real people and they're complicated and they're not all good and they're not all bad. And I don't think that Barbara and I come across as angels necessarily in the book. Like, we kind of air all of our crazy and a lot of people think that this is just a recap of the Tainted Justice series, which ran in the Daily News in 2010 and won the Pulitzer. But actually, it's a lot different than that. It's the story behind the story, and therefore Barbara and I are main characters, along with all these other characters, like drug dealers, as Barbara was saying, and the lawyer for the FOP, for the Fraternal Order of Police, George Bacchetto, who's quite the character, quite a Philadelphia character.
What really came across to me was your incredible drive and, frankly, your love for what you do and love for newspapers. What is the status of newspapers in 2014?
When we wrote this book, we were in bankruptcy and our papers are up for auction again. And so the state of newspapers across the country is dire.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the biggest problem is that they don't have enough reporters to cover all the individual beats, where previously one reporter would, say, cover the police department, and they would become literally an expert on the minutiae of the police department, and they would gather all of these sources, build up sources in a very old-fashioned way. And sometimes those stories would become the seeds, if you will, for a big investigative piece, and it was very organic. And so now we just don't have enough people dedicated to individual beats and really sticking on those beats.
But that's where the relationships are first forged that can lead to investigative breaks. And that was certainly how it played out in the book.
Right. I think the best investigative reporting I think this is a cliche, but every reporter is an investigative reporter. And if you do your job and mind your beat, you're going to come across something.
So who's picking up the slack?
Well, right now, our newspapers, the Daily News and the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philly.com, we're all under the same umbrella. We're headed for auction. I do believe it's like the sixth time in 8 years. So the future is uncertain for what our organization is going to look like. I think that people definitely want, still looking to to philadelphia.com for news. They're looking for their news online. We got to figure out how to work together and how to make money doing it. Because, as we say in the book, that we've trained an entire generation of readers that news is free and that they'll go and they'll pay $4, $5. I'll do it too for a cup of cappuccino at Starbucks, but I won't pay for a subscription to a newspaper because I can just look at my Twitter feed and read anything I want to read. And nobody knows how to close Pandora's box, so to speak, and there's no business model that feels sustainable at the moment.
6 turnovers in 8 years. What's the morale of the remaining staff?
Well, we're a really very tight newsroom, and it's almost like we're a kind of a dysfunctional family. And so we stick together, and we've been, I mean, I came to Philadelphia and started working at the Daily News in 1993. And ever since then, each year or every other year, there's always the threat that we're going to die. So I think at the Daily News, we've lived with it so long. It's like, you know, you've got cancer and you're going to die at some point. So you live with it. It's just, it's a matter of like, when will they turn the lights out? And until they turn the lights out, we'll keep doing this because it's in our blood. It's a job we love, and other reporters at the paper love it. So we're going to keep on going, and we don't. The morale at the Daily News isn't morose. It's more like that this is what we love to do, and let's just keep doing it.
Over the course of Busted, you certainly made enemies, members of the police department, the FBI, drug dealers, informants, literally putting yourself in harm's way. And I suspect that very few of the readers of this book will have ever before been in touch with that kind of a situation firsthand.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people read the book and they say, wow, you guys are really courageous. That was really something. Like, you really put your lives on the line. That I can't believe how courageous you were. But at the time, other than, I mean, we had our moments where we were worried, where the police department, not the police department, but some rogue cops were, you know, taunting us and wishing us dead and saying all kinds of nasty things about us and putting my home address out there on a chat site that they had. There were moments when we were worried, but for us, going out into these communities, is that's what the Daily News does. It really is an extension, like the neighborhoods are an extension of our office, and the best stories about the city are there. They're not in Center City.
But when it crossed to that level where your home address was publicized, then I wonder if your family members found it courageous as well.
You know, this is really terrible, but I didn't at the time. I didn't tell my husband. I was married at the time, and I didn't tell him. But I would open up the door and peek around in the morning and then run out and get my newspaper and then run back in and lock the door. And I'm not a door locker, so my husband was always like, why are you locking the door? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just locking the door. And I think the things that – once you're bitten by the reporting bug – it's hard to get unbitten, and you don't see things the same way other people see things. Like when I was working for the Inquirer and we went to war, we declared war on Iraq, they needed reporters to go overseas and they wanted volunteers. And I was the first person to raise my hand. I didn't get picked to go. And I was disappointed. I remember coming home telling my husband, like, I'm so disappointed. I signed up to go to Iraq. And they, when they say sign up, they mean like, you're going to be leaving tonight. We're putting you on a plane and you're leaving. So I hadn't even discussed it with him, and he was upset, rightly so, you know. But for a reporter, being in the middle of everything, being a part of history, telling history, it's a huge privilege and one that I don't want to give up.
If that adrenaline is your drug and you share that passion as well, do you go into kind of a postpartum when a series like this is completed?
Yeah, you kind of do. I mean, you want the next story, the next high. It's almost like a high, I think, to work on a story like this. I think it's exciting to go places that we went, to get people to talk to us in a world that we don't live in. And most people, like you said, in Philadelphia, don't even visit unless you're buying drugs.
My take from the book is, Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey and Mayor Michael Nutter were clearly part of the solution, not part of the problem. In 2014, what results have come from this investigation, though? Certainly the specific perpetrators are still working in the police department.
Yes, they are. All 5 officers have been placed on desk duty, but they're still getting salaries through taxpayers' money, and they're collecting pensions. And nothing really outside that. The FBI is it was, we can tell, still investigating this, but it's been since 2009. And Commissioner Ramsey is waiting for word from the FBI whether the officers are going to be cleared or whether they're going to be indicted and charged.
Aside from the specifics, have there been systemic changes in how the Narcotics Division is organized?
Certainly, Commissioner Ramsey and Mayor Nutter and the FBI, when they launched the investigation, they moved to make changes, and one of which was more oversight between narcotics officers and their informants. But as you can see, there's still police officers getting arrested and getting into trouble. It's like the same thing over and over again. So it's really disheartening that it seems like nothing changes.
Wasn't it obvious just by your presence in many of these street corners that you weren't from there?
Yeah.
Clearly. But we weren't intimidating. And so we could go up to drug dealers on the corner and ask them questions, and they'd kind of look at us and sometimes chuckle, but they didn't threaten me. They didn't do anything like that at all. So it wasn't like I felt that they were out to get me. I mean, there was one time when I was on a drug corner where I was looking at a memorial, and it was fancier. They had three memorials where they put on street corners where people have been killed. And a man came up to me, started talking to me on the corner while I was looking at the memorial. And all of a sudden he said, you know, you got to get off the corner. And I walked away with him. He was hungry. I got him food and drinks. And then he told me why he wanted me off the corner. And he said that I was standing there like an idiot looking at this memorial, and the drug dealers had hidden the heroin under teddy bears in the memorial. So I was getting in the way of all their drug sales. There was a whole line of cars waiting of people trying to buy their heroin and crack cocaine. And there I was, like, interfering with their business.
It seems like some of the code of that culture is conveyed in your subtitle, A Take of Corruption and Betrayal. And we learn that the corruption is understood and tolerated, but betrayal is the ultimate sin.
Yes. For Benny to turn in or turn against some people, including a person who was like a father to him, is just, I mean, on the streets, that's unforgivable. And Barbara actually had spent, I remember she spent an hour on the phone trying to talk this drug dealer out of killing Benny. So Benny's life, he came to us fearing for his life, and he had good reason. Once they found out that he was a snitch, what they deemed a snitch or a rat, he had a target on his back. That was for sure.
But Benny was street smart, and Benny was manipulative, and you in turn became part of that manipulation.
Yeah, I ended up feeling simpatico, I guess, with Jeff Chudik, because I felt like Benny could really work you over psychologically. You know, he was really good at presenting himself one way and sweeping you into his world and making you feel guilty and making you feel responsible for him and his family. And it was particularly hard for me because he had kids the same age as my kids. And he would say stuff like they have nothing for Christmas or they're scared. And he would just really play on me in a way that I just felt like I just felt tormented by it. I mean, the whole thing came apart between Jeff, the cop, and Benny, the informant, because Jeff was renting one of his homes. Jeff owned some real estate to Benny, and it was a conflict of interest. And so, but we believe that in actuality, looking back, that Jeff did it because he wanted to be nice to Benny. Like, he wanted to do something nice for Benny, because Benny was one of those people you wanted to do things for him. He was like a puppy dog, a stray dog you wanted to take care of.
You cite in the book a Martin Luther King quote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And it seems like that was a beacon that in part propelled you forward in the face of so many who said, "Why are you doing this?"
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, we were doing it because these bodega owners who we describe in the book, who were raided by this one squad, this police squad, and then they all told us, more than 22 of them told us separately and independently, that these cops came into their stores and broke their video surveillance cameras or tore out the wires and then looted the stores and took cash, took cigarettes, batteries, and they all told us the same story. And they hadn't told anyone because they thought that they were scared of the police. They are hardworking immigrants from all over the world, and we found them in all four corners of the city. And they hadn't told anyone. So when we found them, at first, they didn't want to go on the record when we found the first one, two, or three. But after we found so many, and we went back to them and said, look, you're not the only one who's telling us the same story, they all agreed to go on the record. But the sad thing is, in this case, is that these bodega owners have not been called to testify before a grand jury. The one of the merchants who actually had a backup video that shows the cops in his store, and you can hear in its audio and video of them ripping out the cameras and slicing the wires. What happened to him was he ended up losing his store. He had to sell his home and move to a smaller home and now cuts meat at a Costco. And he feels like he didn't get justice. And so the merchants feel like, I mean, they had to hire lawyers to get out of this. And none of them had criminal records before this. And they have suffered, and they just want to know why no one seems to care about what happened to them.
In that sense, is this a closed investigation, or is there hope for relief for them still?
Well, we really don't know, because the FBI doesn't talk to us and tell us the status of the investigation.
How's reaction been so far to the book?
It's been phenomenal. I mean, we've had amazing support. We've had standing room only crowds. People have come up and wanted to talk to us more after each presentation. People say they really do enjoy the book and can't stop reading it once they start.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, that they start reading it and then they can't put it down, and they're sort of cursing us because it's 3 o'clock in the morning and they have to go to work the next day.
Obviously, those are curses of exhilaration versus some of the cursing we heard in the pages of Busted.
Yeah. I mean, obviously journalists really love the book because they see themselves in it. I mean, it's how could you not if you love what you do? And women or regular people who read the book, they just love the characters, the strength of Barbara and myself, and they get a kick out of us. So everybody seems to really enjoy it.
The book is called Busted, A Tale of Corruption and Betrayal in the City of Brotherly Love. Wendy Ruderman, Barbara Laker, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.